Chapter 23, Death of the Emperor Arcadius. Not long after the death of John, the Emperor Arcadius died also. This prince was of a mild and gentle disposition, and toward the close of his life was esteemed to be greatly beloved of God. From the following circumstance, there was at Constantinople an immense mansion called Caria, for in the court of it there is a walnut tree on which it is said Acacius suffered martyrdom by hanging, on which account a chapel was built near it, which the Emperor Arcadius one day thought fit to visit, and after having prayed there, left again. All who lived near this chapel ran in a crowd to see the Emperor, and some going out of the mansion referred to, endeavoured to preoccupy the streets in order to get a better view of their sovereign and his suite, while others followed in his train, until all who inhabited it, including the women and children, had wholly gone out of it. No sooner was this vast pile emptied of its occupants, the buildings of which completely environed the church, than the entire building fell, on which there was a great outcry, followed by shouts of admiration, because it was believed the emperor's prayer had rescued so great a number of persons from destruction. This event occurred in that manner. On the 1st of May, Arcadius died, leaving his son Theodosius only 8 years old, under the consulate of Bassus and Philip, in the second year of the 297th Olympiad. One he had reigned 13 years with Theodosius his father, and 14 years after his death, and had then attained the 31st year of his age. This book includes the space of 12 years and 6 months. 2. Book 7. Chapter I. Anthemius the Praetorian Prefect administers the government of the East in behalf of young Theodosius. After the death of Arcadius on the 1st of May, during the consulate of Bassus and Philip, one his brother Honorius still governed the western parts of the empire, but the administration of the east devolved on his son Theodosius the younger, then only 8 years old. The management of public affairs was therefore entrusted to Anthemius the Praetorian Prefect, grandson of that Philip who in the reign of Constantius ejected Paul from the see of Constantinople, and established Macedonius in his place. By his directions Constantinople was surrounded with high walls. Too he was esteemed and actually was the most prudent man of his time, and seldom did anything unadvisedly, but consulted with the most judicious of his friends respecting all practical matters, and especially with Troilus III the Sophist, who while excelling in philosophical attainments, was equal to Anthemius himself in political wisdom. Wherefore almost all things were done with the concurrence of Troilus. Chapter 2. Character and conduct. Atticus, Bishop of Constantinople. When Theodosius the emperor was in the 8th year of his age, Atticus was in the 3rd year of his presidency over the church at Constantinople, a man as we have by anticipation said one distinguished alike for his learning, piety, and discretion. Wherefore it came about that the churches under his episcopate attained a very flourishing condition. For he not only united those of the household of faith, too, but also by his prudence called forth the admiration of the heretics, whom indeed he by no means desired to harass, but if he sometimes was obliged to impress them with the fear of himself, he soon afterward showed himself mild and clement toward them. But indeed he did not neglect his studies, for he assiduously laboured in perusing the writings of the ancients, and often spent whole nights in the task, and thus he could not be confused by the reasonings of the philosophers, and the fallacious subtleties of the sophists. Besides this he was affable and entertaining in conversation, and ever ready to sympathize with the afflicted, and in a word, to sum up his excellences in the apostles' saying, he was made all things to all men. 3. Formerly while a presbyter, he had been accustomed, after composing his sermons, to commit them to memory, and then recite them in the church, but by diligent application he acquired confidence and made his instruction extemporaneous and eloquent. His discourses, however, were not such as to be received with much applause by his auditors, nor to deserve to be committed to writing. Let these particulars respecting his talents, erudition, and manners suffice. We must now proceed to relate such things as are worthy of record, that happened in his time. Chapter 3, of Theodosius and Agapetus, Bishops of Synnada. A certain Theodosius was bishop of Synnada in Phrygia Pacata, he violently persecuted the heretics in that province, and there was a great number of them, and especially those of the Macedonian sect. He drove them out not only from the city, but also out of the country. This course he pursued not from any precedent in the Orthodox Church, nor from the desire of propagating the true faith, but being enslaved by the love of filthy lucre, he was impelled by the avaricious motive of amassing money, by extorting it from the heretics. To this end he made all sorts of attempts upon the Macedonians, putting arms into the hands of his clergy, and employing innumerable stratagems against them, nor did he refrain from delivering them up to the secular tribunals. One but he especially annoyed their bishop, whose name was Agapetus, and finding the governors of the province were not invested with sufficient authority to punish heretics according to his wish, he went to Constantinople and petitioned for edicts of a more stringent nature from the Praetorian prefect. While Theodosius was absent on this business, Agapetus, who, as I have said, presided over the Macedonian sect, came to a wise and prudent conclusion. Communicating with his clergy, he called all the people under his guidance together, and persuaded them to embrace the Homoousian faith. On their acquiescing in this proposition, he proceeded immediately to the church, attended not merely by his own adherents, but by the whole body of the people. There having offered prayer, he took possession of the episcopal chair in which Theodosius was accustomed to seat himself, and preaching thenceforth the doctrine of consubstantiality, he reunited the people, and made himself master of the churches in the diocese of Synnada. Soon after these transactions, Theodosius returned to Synnada, bringing with him extended powers from the prefect, and knowing nothing of what had taken place, he proceeded to the church just as he was. Being forthwith unanimously expelled, he again betook himself to Constantinople. Upon his arrival at that place he complained to Atticus, the bishop, of the treatment he had met with, and the manner in which he had been deprived of his bishopric. Atticus, perceiving that this movement had resulted advantageously to the church, consoled Theodosius as well as he could, recommending him to embrace with a contented mind a retired life, and thus sacrifice his own private interests to the public good. He then wrote to Agapetus, authorizing him to retain the episcopate, and bidding him be under no apprehension of being molested in consequence of Theodosius's grievance. Chapter 4, A Paralytic Jew Healed by Atticus in Baptism. Thais was one important improvement in the circumstances of the church, which happened during the administration of Atticus. Nor were these times without the attestation of miracles and healings, for a certain Jew, being a paralytic, had been confined to his bed for many years, harried as every sort of medical skill, and the prayers of his Jewish brethren had been resorted to but had availed nothing. He had recourse at length to Christian baptism, trusting in it as the only true remedy to be used. One, when Atticus the bishop was informed of his wishes, he instructed him in the first principles of Christian truth, and having preached to him to hope in Christ, directed that he should be brought in his bed to the font. The paralytic Jew, receiving baptism with a sincere faith, as soon as he was taken out of the baptismal font, found himself perfectly cured of his disease, and continued to enjoy sound health afterwards. This miraculous power Christ vouchsafed to be manifested even in our times, and the fame of it caused many heathens to believe and be baptized. But the Jews, although zealously seeking after signs, to not even the signs which actually took place induced to embrace the faith. Such blessings were thus conferred by Christ upon men. Chapter 5, The Presbyter Sabatius, formerly a Jew, separates from the Navatians. Many, however, making no account of these events, yielded to their own depravity, for not only did the Jews continue in unbelief after this miracle, but others also who loved to follow them were shown to hold views similar to theirs. Among these was Sabatius, of whom mention has before been made, one who, not being content with the dignity of presbyter to which he had attained, but aiming at a bishopric from the beginning, separated himself from the church of the Novatians, making a pretext of observing the Jewish Passover, to holding their four schismatic assemblies apart from his own bishop Sisinius, in a place named Xerolophus, where the Forum of Arcadius now is. he ventured on the performance of an act deserving the severest punishments. Reading one day at one of these meetings that passage in the Gospel where it is said, "3 Now it was the feast of the Jews called the Passover," he added that what was never written nor heard of before, "Cursed be he that celebrates the Passover out of the days of unleavened bread." When these words were reported among the people, the more simple of the Novatian laity, deceived by this artifice, flocked to him. But his fraudulent fabrication was of no avail to him, for his forgery issued in most disastrous consequences. For shortly afterwards he kept this feast in anticipation of the Christian Easter, and many according to their custom flocked to him. While they were passing the night in the accustomed vigils, a panic as if caused by evil spirits fell upon them, as if Sisinnius their bishop were coming with a multitude of persons to attack them. From the perturbation that might be expected in such a case, and their being shut up at night in a confined place, they trod upon one another, insomuch that above 70 of them were crushed to death. On this account many deserted Sabatius. Some, however, holding his ignorant prejudice, remained with him. In what way Sabatius, by a violation of his oath, afterwards managed to get himself ordained a bishop, we shall relate hereafter. 4. Chapter 6. The leaders of Arianism at this time. Dorothas, bishop of the Arians, who, as we have said, one was translated by that sect from Antioch to Constantinople, having attained the age of 119 years, died on the 6th of November, in the 7th consulate of Honorius, and the 2nd of Theodosius Augustus. 2. After him Barbas presided over the Arian sect, in whose time the Arian faction was favoured by possessing two very eloquent members, both having the rank of presbyter, one of whom was named Timothy, and the other George. Now George excelled in Grecian literature, Timothy, on the other hand, was proficient in the sacred scriptures. George indeed constantly had the writings of Aristotle and Plato in his hands. Timothy found his inspiration in Origen. He also evinced in his public expositions of the Holy Scriptures no inconsiderable acquaintance with the Hebrew language. Now Timothy had formerly identified himself with the sect of the Sathyrians, 3, but George had been ordained by Barbas. I have myself conversed with Timothy, and was exceedingly struck by the readiness with which he would answer the most difficult questions, and clear up the most obscure passages in the divine oracles. He also invariably quoted Origen as an unquestionable authority in confirmation of his own utterances. But it is astonishing to me that these two men should continue to uphold the heresy of the Arians, the one being so conversant with Plato, and the other having Origen so frequently on his lips. For Plato does not say that the second and third cause, as he usually terms them, had a beginning of existence, 4, and Origen everywhere acknowledges the Son to be coeternal, 5, with the Father. Nevertheless, although they remained connected with their own church, still they unconsciously changed the Arian sect for the better, and displaced many of the blasphemies of Arius by their own teachings. But enough of these persons. Sisinnius, bishop of the Novatians, dying under the same consulate, Chrysanthus was ordained in his place, of whom we shall have to speak by and by. Chapter 7. Cyril succeeds Theophilus, bishop of Alexandria. Shortly afterwards Theophilus, bishop of Alexandria, having fallen into a lethargic state, died on the 15th of October, 1 in the 9th consulate of Honorius, and the 5th of Theodosius. A great contest immediately arose about the appointment of a successor, some seeking to place Timothy the archdeacon in the episcopal chair, and others desiring Cyril, who was a nephew of Theophilus. A tumult having arisen on this account among the people, Abundantius, the commander of the troops in Egypt, took sides with Timothy. Yet the partisans of Cyril triumphed. To whereupon on the third day after the death of Theophilus, Cyril came into possession of the episcopate, with greater power than Theophilus had ever exercised. For from that time the bishopric of Alexandria went beyond the limits of its sacerdotal functions, and assumed the administration of secular matters. 3. Cyril immediately therefore shut up the churches of the Novatians at Alexandria, and took possession of all their consecrated vessels and ornaments, and then stripped their bishop Theopemptus of all that he had. Chapter 8. Propagation of Christianity among the Persians by Marautas, bishop of Mesopotamia. About this same time it happened that Christianity was disseminated in Persia, by reason of the following causes. Frequent embassies were sent to and fro between the sovereigns of Persia and the Roman Empire, for which there were continual occasions. Necessity brought it about at that time that the Roman Emperor thought proper to send Marutas, Bishop of Mesopotamia, who has been before mentioned, one on a mission to the king of the Persians. The king, discovering great piety in the man, treated him with great honor, and gave heed to him as one who was indeed beloved of God. This excited the jealousy of the Magi, to whose influence is considerable over the Persian monarch, for they feared lest he should persuade the king to embrace Christianity. For Marutas had by his prayers cured the king of a violent headache to which he had been long subject, and which the Magi had been unable to relieve. The magicians therefore had recourse to this deception. As the Persians worship fire, and the king was accustomed to pay his adorations in a certain edifice to the fire which was kept perpetually burning, they concealed a man underneath the sacred hearth, ordering him to make this exclamation at the time of day when the king was accustomed to perform his devotion. The king should be thrust out because he is guilty of impiety in imagining a Christian priest to be loved by the deity. When Adijds, for that was the king's name, heard these words, he determined to dismiss Marutas, notwithstanding the reverence with which he regarded him. But Marutas, being truly a God-loving man, by the earnestness of his prayers, detected the imposition of the Magi. Going to the king therefore, he addressed him thus: "Be not deluded, O king," said he, "but when you again enter that edifice and hear the same voice, explore the ground below, and you will discover the fraud. For it is not the fire that speaks, but human contrivance does this." The king received the suggestion of Marutas and went as usual to the little house where the ever-burning fire was. When he again heard the same voice, he ordered the hearth to be dug up, whereupon the impostor, who uttered the supposed words of the deity, was discovered. Becoming indignant at the deception thus attempted, the king commanded that the tribe of the Magi should be decimated. When this was effected, he permitted Marutas to erect churches wherever he wished, and from that time the Christian religion was diffused among the Persians. Then Marutas, being recalled, went to Constantinople. Not long afterwards, however, he was again sent as ambassador to the Persian court. Again the Magi devised contrivances so as by all possible means to prevent the king from giving him audience. One of their devices was to cause a most disgusting smell where the king was accustomed to go, and then accuse the Christians of being the authors of it. The king, however, having already had occasion to suspect the Magi, very diligently and closely scrutinized the matter, and again the authors of the nuisance were detected. Wherefore he punished several of them, and held Marutas in still higher honor. For the Romans as a nation he had much regard, and prized good feeling on their part very highly. Nay, he almost embraced the Christian faith himself, as Marutas in conjunction with Abdas, Bishop of Persia, gave another experimental proof of its power. For these two, by giving themselves too much fasting and prayer, had cast out a demon with which the king's son was possessed. But the death of Adijds III prevented his making an open profession of Christianity. The kingdom then devolved on Varirhanes, his son, in whose time the treaty between the Romans and Persians was broken, as we shall have occasion to narrate a little later. 4. Chapter 9. The Bishops of Antioch and Rome. During this period, upon the death of Flavian I, Porphyry received the episcopate of Antioch, and after him Alexander II was set over that church. But at Rome, Damasus, having held that bishopric 18 years, Siricius succeeded him, 3, and Siricius having presided the 15 years, Anastasius held sway over the church for 3 years. After Anastasius, Innocent was promoted to the same see. He was the first persecutor of the Novatians at Rome, and many of their churches he took away. Chapter 10. Rome taken and sacked by Alaric. About this same time it happened that Rome was taken by the barbarians. For a certain Alaric, a barbarian who had been an ally of the Romans, and had served as an ally with the emperor Theodosius in the war against the usurper Eugenius, having on that account been honored with Roman dignities, was unable to bear his good fortune. He did not choose to assume imperial authority, but retiring from Constantinople went into the western parts, and arriving at Ericum immediately laid waste the whole country. As he marched, however, the Thessalians opposed him at the mouths of the river Peneus, whence there is a pass over Mount Pindus to Nicopolis in Epirus, and coming to an engagement, the Thessalians killed about 3,000 of his men. After this the barbarians that were with him destroying everything in their way, at last took Rome itself, which they pillaged, burning the greatest number of the magnificent structures and other admirable works of art it contained. The money and valuable articles they plundered and divided among themselves. Many of the principal senators they put to death on a variety of pretexts. Moreover, Alaric, in mockery of the imperial dignity, proclaimed one Attalus to emperor, whom he ordered to be attended with all the insignia of sovereignty on one day, and to be exhibited in the habit of a slave on the next. After these achievements he made a precipitate retreat, a report having reached him that the emperor Theodosius had sent an army to fight him. Nor was this report a fictitious one, for the imperial forces were actually on their way, but Alaric, not waiting for the materialization of the rumor, decamped and escaped. It is said that as he was advancing towards Rome, a pious monk exhorted him not to delight in the perpetuation of such atrocities, and no longer to rejoice in slaughter and blood. To whom Alaric replied, "I am not going on in this course of my own will, but there is a something that irresistibly impels me daily," saying, "Proceed to Rome, and desolate that city." Such was the career of this person. Chapter 11, The Bishops of Rome. After Innocent, Zosimus governed the Roman Church for 2 years, and after him Boniface I presided over it for 3 years. He was succeeded by Celestinus, and this Celestinus took away the churches from the Novatians at Rome also, and obliged Drusticula their bishop to hold his meetings secretly in private houses. Until this time the Novatians had flourished exceedingly in Rome, possessing many churches there, which were attended by large congregations. But envy attacked them also, as soon as the Roman episcopate, like that of Alexandria, extended itself beyond the limits of ecclesiastical jurisdiction, and degenerated into its present state of secular domination. For thenceforth the bishops would not suffer even those who agreed with them in matters of faith to enjoy the privilege of assembling in peace, but stripped them of all they possessed, praising them merely for these agreements in faith. The bishops of Constantinople kept themselves free from this sort of conduct, inasmuch as in addition to tolerating them and permitting them to hold their assemblies within the city, as I have already stated, they treated them with every mark of Christian regard. Dash.